Sometimes you need someone to be around you, someone to sit down and pour you shochu. But sometimes saying goodbye to familiar folks is the only way. Sometimes that's when you finally find your space.
Welcome to the Japan Distilled Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Pellegrini, recording in Tokyo, Japan. And with me, as always, in Fukuoka, Japan, is my co-host, Stephen Lyman. We are both certified shochu and awamori professionals, published authors, and we've visited more distilleries than we can remember. We've been exploring the wonderful world of Japanese spirits for a combined 3 decades and are very excited to share them with you through this podcast. Stephen, how's it going?
I'm doing well, Christopher. Always a pleasure to be in the studio with you, talking Japanese spirits, and I think we've got a good one in store. You and I are both actually going back to the States tomorrow, and I don't know the last time that you and I flew to America on the same day. Has that ever happened before?
Yes, it has. We were in the same section of the airplane one time 100 years ago.
Were we?
We were on either side of the aisle, maybe off by a row, and we were annoying the hell out of the cabin attendants because we kept ordering shochu oyuwari. And they're like, these guys, man, they're going to do my head in with all these oyuwari orders. Do you remember that? That might have been like 2019, 2020, 20.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was in the before times, a long, long time ago.
Yeah, I think it was.
But it's certainly been a while.
Yeah, but we got to get this thing in the can so that we can traipse off to the United States again without too many worries, without any stress that we're not going to have the content we need for our loyal fans all around the world. Thank you very much to all of you out there for joining another episode. And hopefully you find this one about awamori to be just as educational and entertaining as always.
If I may interject before we jump in, we will be doing a happy hour, collaborative happy hour with Death & Company in Manhattan on Tuesday, April 16th, 5 to 7 p.m. They're coming up with some pretty amazing shochu cocktails, and I'm very excited to see what they come up with.
So if you're going to be in the New York City area next Tuesday, please come join us at Death & Company. It's going to be a wild time.
Should be a great time. It's rare that you and I appear in the same place anymore, especially in the U.S.
That's true.
So should be fun.
Yeah. So what are we up to right now? What's this episode all about?
Well, we've promised to do this for a long time, and we have just so many topics we want to cover, so many people we want to interview, and finally, we're jumping in, and we're going to do our first awamori distillery profile.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that it took us this long, but we are starting off with a bang. We're actually going to focus on one of our favorites. I think I can say that for Stephen as well.
Absolutely.
It's a distillery called Chūko Distillery. It's located in Tomigusuku, which is, I guess, as the crow flies, kind of southeast of the airport in Naha, but it's on the main island. And actually, the distillery used to be called Tomigusuku Distillery. It was renamed Chūko after the gentleman who founded it, Chūko Oshiro, retired from the business. At first, it was, of course, they were making awamori. They were also raising pigs, and they did a bunch of things, but it's now solely an awamori and sometimes fruit liqueur, basically beverage alcohol entity. It's a lovely place that has a lot going on. Stephen and I have both been there a bunch of times, and we are very excited about their innovative nature and the fact that they do so much more than you would expect from a distillery right on site.
Yeah, so awamori. You're absolutely right, Christopher. Chūko is one of our favorite distilleries down in Okinawa, and we'll get into that. But let's take a step back. This is the Japan Distilled Podcast. There are 47 awamori makers in Japan. This is only the third episode we've done on awamori. Hmm. We did episode 3 when we introduced it as one of the foundational spirits of Japan. And then in episode 56, we jumped into Ryukyu awamori, or the geographical indication for awamori. Of course, we talk about it interspersed throughout many other episodes, but this is only the third one that's been wholly dedicated to this really, really amazing spirits category. And I feel like we need to do a better job in introducing this worldwide.
Yeah, I agree. We have to spend a lot more time talking about Aomori since basically, as we often like to describe it, it is shochu's auntie in terms of when it's believed that Aomori was born, when it was first made. So there's certainly a lot of history here to unpack. There's a huge war that Aomori played backdrop and victim to in the interim. Aomori was nearly lost. If you listen to episode number 56, then you would have heard that story. It's a story of a beautiful culture with amazing people and a very lovely subtropical way of life that Aomori is part and parcel with. It's a place that Stephen and I love to visit. In fact, it's a place that I'm sure I've said this before. I try to spend at least a couple of months visiting every calendar year. And over the past few years, I've managed to hit that mark. It's so much more relaxed and laid back than what I'm accustomed to up in Tokyo, Japan. And probably, I don't know what you think, Stephen, it's probably more laid back than where you are as well.
It really is. It reminds me of Florida, where I grew up, or Hawaii in many ways, where there's just a different pace. And even in Kyushu, we have a slower pace than Tokyo, of course, because I don't know if anybody has a pace like Tokyo's. But Fukuoka is probably closer to Tokyo than it is to Okinawa.
Yeah, that's fair.
Especially once you get off the main island.
100%.
I was down in Ishigaki for the first time not that long ago and just fell in love with the island. Just such a beautiful place. Nature, history, amazing food, of course, and really, really friendly local people. And all of Okinawa feels that way for the most part. It's just really special part of the country. And I think someplace that everyone owes themselves to visit if they have the opportunity.
Absolutely. Now, Chūko Distillery, which is now run by a gentleman named Tsutomu Oshiro, he is related to the founder, of course, is a really, really interesting place that you can walk to from the monorail line that snakes from the airport all the way through downtown Naha and way up towards Shuri Castle and beyond. Actually, all the way past a dentist that I've had to use before because I cracked a tooth when I was in Okinawa. But I recommend taking a bus from one of those train stations that's not too far from the airport, one of the monorail stations. When you pull up to it, it's kind of an unassuming space that is run by such a dynamic guy, Mr. Oshiro. I met him for the first time in Tokyo, actually, at a JSS event that I was speaking at, and he was over on the side, and he came up to me afterwards and he's like, "You seem like you're a funny guy. I like you." And I was like, "Okay, all right. I don't know what you meant by funny. I'm going to hope that like actually means like, and not that just merely tolerable." But we've had a pretty good relationship ever since. And I've always told him that I'm fascinated by the things that they do at Chūko Distillery. I'm always have had a lot of respect for the fact that they're always looking for a new way to do something classic, a new way to just thinking outside the box, whether it's about isolating new yeast strains or finding new ways to develop flavor and aroma, you know. And then, of course, we'll get into it, the vessels that they age some of their product in. It's just such a dynamic place that's sort of hiding in plain sight down there. And I hope that they get a lot of the respect overseas that I think they so richly deserve.
For sure. And I would say that Mr. Oshiro has a really good judge of character because you are a funny guy.
Funny haha or funny, like he's a little weird. I'm not sure which one that is, but whatever. He doesn't mind having a drink with us. So I guess we're on the right path there.
That's right. Weird in the best ways, I think. Now, Chūko was established in 1949, which you had mentioned at the top of the episode. And that's a really important moment in the history of Aomori. And you had alluded to the fact that there was a war. And of course, that was the Pacific War or World War II. And the Battle of Okinawa was the last land battle of the Pacific Theater. But the next thing that happened was the preparation for the invasion of the mainland Japan and the dropping of the atomic bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So the last major land battle that happened was in Okinawa. And tragically, Virtually all of the distilleries were completely destroyed. Many of the families that made the Awamori were killed. They even believe that black koji, which is required for Awamori production, had been lost.
Right.
And it was only discovered on a straw mat that was dug out of the rubble in the Sanka neighborhood at the base of Shuri Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1946, the Okinawans came to the occupying American military and said, look, we really want to start making our local spirits again. Can we do that? And American bureaucracy being what it is, they hemmed and they hawed. And finally, a couple of years later, they opened up applications for distilling licenses. And I think between 75 and 80 licenses were approved. And only 11 of those could be traced back to families that had been making Awamori before the war.
Mm.
So most of the Awamori makers in existence today can set their founding at 1949, because that was the year that the licenses were issued. That first round of licenses post-war.
It's pretty insane.
Really is. Fortunately, the industry has survived and Okinawa has rebuilt, but it was definitely a tragic moment in the history of the islands.
Absolutely. Now we're talking about roughly four dozen Awamori producers that are mostly on the main island, but they are strewn further and farther afield on some outerlying islands. Let's talk about scale here. Now, none of the Awamori makers sell anywhere close to the top 10 shochu makers in the country. The top shochu maker, at least in 2022, by 2022 sales. We don't know last year's sales yet. They usually come out in like May or June. But in 2022, we know that this will surprise no one. Kirishima Shuzo, the makers of Kuro Kirishima, sold over 58,000 kiloliters of product. Now, in 2022, Chūko, which is not a small Awamori maker, they're kind of medium-sized, probably medium plus, they made only 900 kiloliters of product. Much of that was set aside to be aged extensively. And so the amount that they actually sold that year is, of course, that's not a publicly known figure at this point. The makers of Ichiko, the brand that is more famous worldwide, but less, it's sold less in terms of volume here in Japan, was a little bit less than half of what Kirishima was selling. So it's just orders of magnitude. So this is a distillery that makes plenty of product, but they put a lot of it aside. And you'll understand why they do that in a moment when we talk about some of their aging techniques and how much pride they take in them, how the lengths that they go to ensure the quality of that aging process is kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to that in a second. But why don't we talk about brands first? What are some of the Chūko brands?
Sure. So maybe just a quick refresher for those who haven't gone back and listened to episode 3 or episode 56. Awamori is always made from rice, always black koji. All of the rice is inoculated with koji before it goes into the fermentation. So it's what we would call a Zen koji spirit. So 100% koji spirit. And then, of course, you can't add anything to it after distillation, and you're distilling in a pot still. It's all sort of the similar rules to shochu, except black koji and all of the rice has to be inoculated. So that's a pretty narrow spectrum compared to shochu, with all of the different ingredients, different kinds of koji and that sort of thing. And yet, despite that, Chūko, just in this one distillery, ends up having this really, really broad spectrum of profiles that they're able to create in their distillery. And it goes from the really traditional Chūko brand, which is their flagship, the main product that they sell, to Yume Kokai, which is a vacuum distilled Awamori that's made with, it's one of the sake yeasts that expresses green apples. And it basically is just like it's like drinking an apple flavored Jolly Rancher. It's that apple forward. And they're fascinating spirits. And those are the two that kind of come to mind right out of the gate, because they're just so different. You have the very traditional classic Awamori with Chūko, and then you've got this super apple fruity light Yume Kokai brand. So those are just a couple that jump out to me. And I usually have a bottle of each at home to enjoy, depending on the time of year. Yume Kokai, you can imagine, with that bright fruit and apple, is amazing in a highball and is a great summer sipper. Where Chuko, especially when you start to get some age on it, becomes very lush and rich and decadent, all the things that I love in long-aged awamori.
And if I may be so bold, I'd love to add a little bit about a brand that is very near and dear to our hearts, and one that we talk about all the time, Yoka Koji, which is a relatively recent expression for Chuko. It's Yoka meaning 4 days, and Koji meaning Koji, of course. But what's really interesting about this brand is that it's a significantly longer Koji propagation process than is customary for other drinks made with Koji, whether they're sake or they're shochu or other awamori. Usually that process takes up to about 2 days, 42 hours to 46, 48 hours. And for Yoka Koji, they double the length of the process. Now, the result of that process is an absolute umami bomb. And if you haven't had it before, check the show notes over on the website on japandistilled.com, because you'll get a visual there and you'll be able to go out and look for it. But it's a real shapeshifter on the palate and should not really be the yardstick by which you judge any other awamori, because it's so original in terms of its flavor profile and its attack. And this is indicative of what is within the DNA of Chuko Distillery. Really, everything in their lineup can be proud on its own and be original on its own and complement or add another color to the rainbow of expressions that Chuko can put out there on the market. That is also enabled by their experimentation with yeasts. They have figured out how to isolate a specific yeast that was growing on a Japanese mango tree. And that mango yeast is used in a couple of their expressions to very interesting effect. And when it's clay pot aged, it takes on another life of its own. It's fascinating how they have figured out how to push all these different levers in different ways. Steven said before that it's the category itself is a little bit constricted. There are guardrails on what you can do. I mean, you can only use rice and you have to use black koji. And as usual, like with everything else in the indigenous spirit space, you have to use pot distillation. You're really trading down on ethanol in favor of flavor and aroma. And yet, even with those guardrails on the practice, they really bring out all of these different expressions. Yoka Koji is a great indicator of what they've been able to do through their lab work, their experimentation, and their dedication to just doing things that are going to play in a slightly new way.
Yep, fascinating brand for sure. And I knew you wanted to talk about Yoka Koji, so I focused on a couple of others from them to let you sing the praises of that gorgeous spirit. But
yeah,
I share your enthusiasm for it. When I tell people about it, I introduce Yoka Koji at tastings or educational seminars or things that I do. I say, all right, for many of you, this is probably the first awamori you will ever have, because most people haven't tried awamori yet. And the next thing I say is, and this is not like any other awamori you will have in the future, because it is such a singular brand. It is not representative of the category.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating spirit. I absolutely love the texture and the mouthfeel of Yoka Koji. And it's unusual in the sense that it's bottled quite young. It's about 6 months old when it goes in the bottle. So it's really fresh. And when I first began exploring awamori, there were only a handful of brands, I'd say less than a half dozen, available in America back when I fell down this rabbit hole. And my original tasting notes were like sweaty gym socks and men's locker room. Like, it was not a favorable image that I had of awamori early on. Now, you start to learn that those funky flavors and aromas actually point toward mushroom, umami, savoriness, but it's things that I was unfamiliar with in a spirit. And so I went to things that were familiar, which was sweaty dudes from my time as an athlete, right? Now, I do think awamori generally as a category has mellowed in the last 15, 20 years. So I don't think it's quite as funky as it was back then, much of it. I mean, of course, there are still some resolutely traditional brands. But when you come across something like Yoka Koji, like the Yoka Koji with the mango yeast, they're just so different and so interesting. And it just makes you realize what's possible in this category. And no doubt that Chuko is on the leading edge. They're one of those distilleries that when they do something, a couple, 3 years later, you're going to see others trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. They really are a thought leaders in the awamori industry. And it's funny because I've never actually been in the distillery. You said that when you visit, it's unassuming. There's an elevated highway, and on one side of the highway is the production facility, and on the other side of the highway is the tasting room, the storage warehouse, and a test distillery where they work on new products. I've never been across the street. How about you?
Yeah, no, I've only looked in, and it looked like every other medium scale awamori distillery that I've visited, and exactly like the large scale ones, just with slightly fewer tanks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I've never spent any time over there. I think it's just a part of the process that they don't figure that it's as entertaining, especially since their production is split in half in terms of they've got the production on one side, and then they've got the cool stuff on the other side of the road, which is the studio, and then all of the stuff where they're the aging and everything, and where a lot of the flavors are matured. But it's a good point. They don't even really mention that part of it very much because it's so industrial looking, I think, from the outside, mm-hmm. and not quite as sexy as everything they have on the other side of the street.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess that's true for awamori distilleries generally, that they tend to be very utilitarian.
Yeah.
You tend to have either concrete or metal fabrications, mm-hmm. as the distillery exterior. And then you just got a lot of things inside that are going to be resistant to salt air.
Yep.
Because of the island nature of it. So they're not pretty places. It's not like going to Scotland and seeing a gorgeous...
No, they're not sexy at all.
Tourist destination distillery. They're just very utilitarian, very practical.
Yep.
And that may be part of it. And then when you go across the street, of course, you've got the incredible shop, the tasting room, and the storage warehouse, which are all pretty impressive.
And the aging cellar too, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. I think we should probably ask about that. Ask to just go see it. I would love to see it. I want to know how many stills they have. I'm sure they have at least four or five. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I just want to see what that part of the facility looks like. But otherwise, yeah, I don't know, maybe they just don't want any tourists in there, or any folks who aren't part of the system already bringing whatever story they have from the food they ate, from the dogs they hugged, you know, the day prior, into their probably largely open fermentation space. So maybe that's part of it, who knows.
No, you may be absolutely right about that. When you go into the shop/tasting room, the first thing you see are these gorgeous ceramic pots, and all different sizes and shapes, and you can basically customize any of their spirits in any of the size vessels.
Yep.
For your own consumption, basically. And that's a beautiful thing about awamori, is that there's such a tradition of self-aging, of either taking the pots home, or you can even buy a pot, fill it with awamori, and leave it in their cellar.
Yep.
So that's the second thing you see when you walk into this building, where the shop is before you even get to the shop section, there's stairs down to the cellar, and the subfloor, the basement of the shop, are all the customer pots. And you can go down there, and they have glass walls. You can look through, and you can see, this is for Mr. Tanaka, and he bought it in 1998. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, whatever. It's kind of fascinating that they curate, basically. They're willing to keep your product for you until it's aged long enough that you want to drink it.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And that's such a uniquely Okinawan thing, I feel like.
Yeah, and we'll talk about ceramics a little bit more, but another thing that is kind of fun about that particular building is they have both a tasting counter, which I think the plebes get to drink at, and then if you have scheduled a tour, or if you have some personal connection to the distillery, then they'll open up this new tasting bar at the back that can basically takes maybe 5 or 6 people at a time. It's a space where they show their pride in the academic origins of the experimentation that they do and how they are very much a friend of academia. They do team up with private laboratories and university laboratories to try to isolate new yeast strains and to figure out really what's going on in the fermentation so that they, because through understanding it better, they can harness it, manipulate it more effectively. And you get a lot of that talk, and then they run you through a tasting that is all in these little thimble size, maybe large thimble, maybe Andre the Giant size thimble cups, ceramic cups. And they, you know, Stephen talked about Yume Kōkai before, so you have that apple flavor. They got an Awamori that presents a lot of banana on it. They've got this caramel focused one. And this is all from black kojified rice. It's remarkable what they're able to do with the flavor profile, either by leveraging the specific yeast strain or through long aging in their ceramic pots usually. And that's something that is incredibly unique about this place.
That's right. If you go to a liquor store in Okinawa and you want to buy a ceramic pot to take home, virtually all the pots look the same. Mm. They're all this very traditional round brown ceramic. And the only thing that differs pot to pot is the brand name on the front. Sure. And the color of the fabric on the top.
Right.
And that's it. Right. They're basically mass produced somewhere by someone. We don't know who. And distilleries buy them and fill them and ship them. And Chuko does not do that. Chuko makes their own, which is phenomenal.
It's insane.
It's one of the most unique things I've ever seen in a distillery.
Yeah, I don't know if there's another distillery in the world that has a pottery studio in the middle of it, but I'm thinking there can't be that many.
No. And it's not just like one studio. There's got to be, what, maybe 8 spinning workspaces? And I think there's 4 kilns.
There's 4 kilns, yep. And they make all their own clay, of course.
Yep.
So they have all the machinery for that.
Right, right.
To, you know, to mix the different types of soil with water, to punch out the air bubbles and make the clay really of a smooth consistency. Yeah, it's a just this really cool style. And Stephen said most of the pots are this round shape. And he and I both have those on our counter in our home offices / home bars. But Chuko does a bunch of different silhouettes that are characterized by this really cool scorching on one side that has sort of come to define this new local style, which is called Gusukuyaki. It's striking, it's memorable, and you look at it and you're just like, oh, wow, that's really cool. I kind of have to have that. How many $100 do I have to drop on that thing?
Exactly. I was very, very impressed the first time I went, and of course, enamored with the ceramics. And they've actually, it took them, I think, what, 5 or 6 years to work out the right mix of clay from, I believe, the north end of Okinawa Island and the south end of Okinawa Island. And they mix those two clays together to make what becomes this very stable, strong, and gorgeous ceramic once it's been fired.
Yeah.
So they've been making their own pots since 1989.
Nuts.
So they've been at it for a while.
Yeah. And it also, they had to figure out the exact ramping of temperature. Mm-hmm. Because if you did it too fast or you did it too slow, then all sorts of haywire ensues inside the kiln. So they figured out this is not all that irregular, but they do run the pots through twice. That scorching that I told you about is in the second go when they put, I can't remember the name of the substance, but they put something in there that sort of explodes. Mm-hmm. During the firing, and it scorches one side, the interfacing side of each of the pots on specific levels. They don't scorch everything. I mean, they do make those little thimble sized cups, and they make other types of vessels, and they make karakara and other things. They don't scorch everything that goes in there, but a lot of the larger size pots do have that telltale signature, one of a kind scorching. Everyone's different, that you pay plenty of money to age your awamori in.
That's right. I believe it's an organic material. I think it might be a dried grass, like a local grass of some sort that they...
Yeah, or something birch related. I can't remember. Yeah.
Kind of gives you a big, big hot fire boom kind of thing, and it scorches the ceramics, and they are beautiful. I don't want to say how much I spent to buy and fill one of those 5.4 liter pots, which is about the biggest one I could possibly afford to have them shipped to me. Mm-hmm. It was, I would say, easily the most expensive spirits purchase I've ever made. And let's leave it at that.
Yeah. But you can now age your awamori at home. You can age anything you want at home now. And that's pretty cool.
That's right. Yeah. It's a really, really special keepsake. And it's utilitarian, because a lot of home aging is part of awamori culture. You might visit the home of an Okinawan awamori aficionado and find pots just lined up along the floorboards of the space where he or she tends to drink. And it's either a vertical, so it's older and older product from the same distillery, or it's just their own pots from all the different distillers that they like. Mm-hmm. And they have these, and then there's the whole concept of shitsugi, which we've talked about before, which is where it's a solera, so you basically are refilling what you've consumed out of your older pot with some newer spirit, either from that same distillery or from another distillery. And there's all kinds of blending that goes on at home.
Yeah.
So there isn't the sense of purity or respect for a specific brand or a specific producer. It's for awamori generally. And it's Bar Sunshine, right, where he does his own blends.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He's very proud of them.
Be prepared for a wild ride. It's a little bit like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory for awamori, but it's a pretty wild place, and he just does all kinds of blends of different awamoris from different producers. We're getting kind of far afield, but I think Chuko with their own ceramics gives you a really, really beautiful shelf presence for your own home aging.
Absolutely.
That's quite striking.
Yeah. Speaking of wild rides, last year, I think, yeah, it would have been 2023. I went in there in the spring, and he was like, "Hey, Pellegrini, we got a new way to drink Yoka Koji." I was like, "Okay." And went over to the counter. They hadn't finished the new tasting bar yet, and tried... Oh, that's not true. They just hadn't opened it up yet. But they pulled Yoka Koji out of the freezer. I was like, "All right."
Okay.
And they poured it into a shot glass. It was actually a glass, not a ceramic vessel. And I said, "That's different. What are you going to make with that?" And they're like, no, drink it. And I'm like, "What?" And they're like, "It's a partial shot." And I was like, "That's not partial at all. That's 2 freaking ounces." And so, you know, 43% ABV spirit. And I've got 2 shots here. I got a double. And they're like, "Go ahead, shoot it." I'm like, "What? Am I on camera? What are you guys trying to do to me?" But they were like, "No, this is the way that we're pushing it now." And they backed that up with... They showed me some posters that they were sending out to all the izakaya in Naha, and they were really trying to push this. And I sipped it, and I was like, "You know what? That is actually pretty good." It was very, very thick and viscous. They put it in a deep freezer, so I think it was not your average everyday freezer that you have in your home. This was like a more industrial freezer, and it wasn't frozen, but it was viscous.
Sure,
and it was a little sweeter than I was expecting, and it was good. And they were like, this is a new way to drink it. I was like, "Yeah, I'm only going to have one of those," but it was better than I expected. The partial shot, I don't know where that reference comes from. I feel like it's probably from a movie that's going straight over my head, but I'm sorry. I just thought of that, so I thought I'd bring it up. That was hilarious.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I said earlier, I really love the texture, the mouthfeel of Yoka Koji as a brand. Mm. And the spirit that it reminds me of a little bit in that texture is Hanatare, which we've talked about before.
That's interesting.
Which is the basically the heads, right? And
yeah,
and that's really viscous, and it's typically served frozen in a similar fashion. So that might, maybe that's where they got the idea, but it is a really pretty drink that way. So I'll have to put my Yoko Koji in the freezer. Unfortunately, all I have right now is a 1.8 liter. So I'm going to have to get one of the smaller bottles to fit in the freezer.
You're going to have to pour it off. In a Japanese size fridge, yeah, you're going to definitely have to pour that one off.
That's right.
Yeah.
We had talked before about the aging in the cellar, but that's the customer's pots. That's the pots that people have purchased and are leaving at the distillery to have shipped to them later, to come pick up later. But most of the aging actually happens in their warehouse. And we had mentioned that earlier in the show.
Right.
And their current warehouse is actually the largest wooden structure in Okinawa on the main island. And it was number two, but remember we mentioned Shuri Castle had been destroyed during World War II. It was rebuilt and it burnt down again in, I believe, 2015.
Yep.
And so until Shuri Castle is once again rebuilt, the Chuko Aging Warehouse is the largest wooden structure on the island. Just a little trivia.
That's right.
There.
Yep. It's a very cool structure. It's an amazing building.
Yep.
It's real hard to get a good photo of because there's a frickin'... What is that shop that's right next to it? I can't believe it. It's right in the parking lot. It juts out just far enough. It's like a...
What is this? Like a dry cleaner and a soba shop sharing a
something building. Like some dumb crap like that that gets in the way of the shot. Like getting a good clean shot of the entire building in all its majesty. But you can't because of this stupid single floor, largely temporary structure that... So annoying. But anyways, beautiful place. They have this tower, this kind of multi-level, many-leveled tower of clay pots that they made in the studio with awamori aging in it for various numbers of years. And then they also have some gigantic steel vats that are several stories tall inside of that building that are also letting some of their probably cheaper products chill out in and sort of marry before they are bottled at much younger ages. But it's a fascinating place. Hats off to Chuko Distillery, who continue to innovate and continue to pull the various levers at their disposal to come up with new flavor and aroma profiles. And every time I go there, they come up with something new. They've started messing around with domestic Japanese rice in their awamori production, which, as we've explained before, is incredibly rare. They try lots of new things, and they tend to, well, I'm sure they don't share all of the experiments with us, but everything that they share with us is absolutely fascinating.
It really is, no question. Incredibly creative and very, very high quality spirits that are coming out of Chuko. Definitely one of my favorites, and I highly recommend anybody who has the time and interest, if you get down to Okinawa, take that little side trip not far from the airport to go visit, go in the tasting room, see what you like. See what'll fit in your luggage, because you're going to want to take home some ceramic as well. It's a special place.
It's heavy though, so good luck.
If you live in Japan, they will ship it to you.
Very true. Yep. And it's not exorbitantly priced, but even if you can just send it to your hotel, mm-hmm. you know, before you head out on your airplane or wherever your ferry to the next destination. But
true.
I digress. Yep. You sipping on anything right now?
Of course I am. I knew this was a special episode, and so I decided to crack something that I've been saving. Mm. As you know, I think you and I both really like to go and visit, they call them pawn shops, but these are basically secondhand stores, and you can buy all sorts of things there. But when you go to Okinawa, you can find a lot of old awamori.
True.
Which makes it very special. And I remember I had been down there, and I had visited a shop, and I saw a Chuko pot that looked pretty old, sitting on the shelf, and I didn't buy it. I was like, I don't know. I've already got a lot for my luggage, but it's, you know, when you think about buying something and you don't do it and you regret it, mm-hmm. and you hope when you go back the next day, it's still going to be there. I had that moment with this Chuko pot. So I went back and I bought it, and it was in this very quite luxurious orange box, and it's almost got like a fabric cover to the orange. It's definitely intended as a gift. And clearly, whoever received this gift decided to sell it rather than drink it, because it ended up in this secondhand shop. And when I opened the box, the plastic seal was still on the top of the pot.
Oh, jeez.
And when I took it out of the box tonight to crack it open at long last, I turn the pot around and there's a stamp on the back with the bottling date from 2009. Mm. So this is a 2009 Chuko Awamori aged in their proprietary ceramic. It's a 1.8 liter and it was 5 years old when it went in the pot. Mm-hmm. So that would make it about, 18 years old now.
Yeah, that's actually really similar to the one I'm drinking.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's funny.
I was sure you're going to be having a partial shot. It's really good. It's interesting because I've had other Awamori approximately this age, but aged in the typical ceramic. Uh-huh. And I feel like this has a little bit more of the ceramic character.
Okay.
I think there's a little bit more of the minerality than I get from the standard pots that are used.
Mine's similar to that too.
Which gives it another layer of complexity.
Yeah.
Which is, it's pretty cool. And of course, I'm drinking it in a rocks glass that was made in the Chuko kiln. So it's got the scorch on the side.
Nice.
I am drinking it over a nice big cube because when I'm sipping a fine spirit, of course, I like to try it straight. But if I'm just sitting and enjoying it, I want it just on a big ball of ice. It's just how I drink.
Yep.
Apologies to all of the purists out there.
No, it's good. You got to try it both ways. It works so well, so many different ways. I'm also drinking from a pot. It's a 3 year old that went into the pot in 2007. So it's like a very similar age.
Oh yeah,
it was younger when it went in, but it went in a couple of years earlier than yours. It sounds like, so they're close.
They are.
Yeah, that's funny. And this one is from a rather small clay pot, so there's a lot of contact. Mm. It is not scorched. It's one of the earlier ones, I guess. It's pretty good. I've only ever really had anything from it on special occasions, and this certainly is a special occasion to be talking about Chuko and focusing solely on Chuko Awamori. So I was like, yeah, let's dip into that. I'm sipping it neat, also from a small Chuko vessel, just because I'm not going to drink a lot of it. I want to save it for other special occasions. But sure, it's probably the second or the third time I've cracked it open. It's good. It's real good.
Very nice. Yeah. I think everyone out there can tell that we're pretty big fans of the Chuko distillery. I do know that in America, the Chuko Kusu, so Kusu meaning Koshu or aged Awamori, is available in some markets. I believe that's a three-year-old of their main brand. And of course, Yokokoji is also available from Chuko in the US. Mm-hmm. And I believe in the UK. I'm not sure about other markets, but...
Yes, it is. It is available in the UK too.
So there are some Chuko products out there floating around outside of Japan. And if you can find them, enjoy them. They're really, really worth seeking out.
Yeah. That's all from us on this topic. I think you got anything else that you want to throw out there about Chuko?
One thing.
Okay.
So Mr. Oshiro is one of the best dressed people in the Awamori business.
Yeah, he's always sporting a pretty good kariyushi, which is an Okinawan aloha shirt, essentially, but they're way more refined.
Yep. His are incredible too. They tend to be long sleeve and they are collarless, but they're still buttoned down and they're striking shirts, and he wears them very well. Just a really, I guess the Japanese word for it would be dandy. For a well-dressed older gentleman, and he certainly qualifies. Really, really fascinating guy in a fascinating distillery.
Dandy.com. Maybe we should name a brand after him.
You could try.
We could try. I don't know if he'd like that, though. We'd have to run it by him, and he would definitely have thoughts about it.
He has many, many thoughts.
Well,
yeah.
He has thoughts, yes, and we love him for it. And that's why we keep going back. So, hats off to Chuko, hats off to you, Stephen, and hats off to everybody listening right now. Thank you all so much for joining us for another episode of Japan Distilled. If you've not already, then please consider rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. It really does help others to find the show. And please feel free to reach out to us directly on Instagram. You can find me at Christopher Pellegrini over there. How about you, Stephen?
You can reach out to me at Japan Distilled, both on Instagram and Twitter, not X. And please check out our website, japandistilled.com, for the show notes for this and every episode. I spend some time on them, and I'm usually trying to give you little tidbits, and hopefully you enjoy.
And photos. Photos, yes, are important.
Lots of photos.
That's where you get the visuals. Very useful. And of course, don't forget to sign up for our Patreon at www.patreon.com/japandistilled. I'm going to, just before we chime in on Kanpai, let's use the Okinawan version of Kanpai for this one. How about that?
I already knew that that's what we were going to do.
Excellent. So on three, two, one.
Kari. A brisk 51 minutes.
Sorry, Rich. That was a long one. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Distilled podcast. This has been Christopher Pellegrini with my co-host Stephen Lyman. Our theme song is Begin Anywhere by the very talented Tomoko Miyata. Audio engineering by the incomparable Rich Pav, who also edits the fantastic Uncanny Japan podcast with Teresa Matsuura. Please give that a listen as well if you're interested in Japanese fables and ghost stories.